This episode of the A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for mise they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
It's just like, why? Not everything I do is like horrible. Like, you can't have it both ways, old man.
Jay Boosh.
Damn it! Why am I always so ahead of the curve, and then somebody like Owen makes a deck popular, and now I sound like every deck brewer on the planet?
Scotty.
It's actually a secret ploy for her to get you two to spend more time together. Your mom next levels you.
Yeah, like, serious.
And Jeremy.
Do you know how hard it is to buy Korean singles?
No.
And when you put Korean singles into Google's, do you know what you get? You don't get Magic cards.
And now, the A-Team.
Hello and welcome to the A-Team episode 181. I don't know what it's going to be called, but it's going to be great. Since I proclaimed last episode that this is a fucking interview show now, we're not bringing anyone to interview. So I have got our favorite group of people. KYT's here. KYT, say something. Yeah, that's about normal. I also got Mr. Scotty Mac.
What's going on?
Beautiful. And Jay motherfucking Boosh.
Hello.
How are we doing today?
KYT laughing here somewhere, that would be really cool.
Yeah, like we not only are we not doing an interview show, but we also just to appease you, we got rid of somebody.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's right. We had to sacrifice one just to get through, you know, the last seven.
We felt like you had this like overabundance of A-Team, so we needed to, you know, prune the shrub a little bit.
Holy shit, that's erotic.
Someone message John Stern. Let's get John Stern on. Interview
John
show.
Stern, winner of the latest GP.
Yes.
He fucking demolished that shit. It was absurd.
Gave it a stern beatdown.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
That was sternly good.
Oh, my God. That
was terrible.
Please stop.
I think. Yep. I wonder if this just recently started happening since he had his kid.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've embraced dad jokes.
Okay, great.
I actually say hashtag dad joke usually after shit like that.
Oh, okay.
Man,
work, people, I don't think they tolerate it, but they do to my face at least. You know, for however long they're there, they usually walk away.
Right.
Yeah. And then at the dinner table, you know, that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
My wife suffers. My daughter too, but she's too young to really understand. I don't think it'll have lasting damage. I hope.
We hope. Oh, that's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a PTQ.
I had a PTQ.
And how did it go? Like, you were doing well, I thought.
Yeah. So I got to the event center. I got there a day early because it was my birthday that weekend, and I wanted to go down because my mom was in town from out east. So my mom and her husband, and we all went down to Calgary and went to the zoo the day before because Calgary's got a pretty bitchin' zoo. And, yeah, did all that stuff, went to Denny's for breakfast for my birthday, which was the fanciest place I ate at, that day.
yeah,
really rough Friday. Let's just put it that way. But yeah, it was good. And, went to the zoo, saw all kinds of crazy things. Petra loved the monkeys. So she had a real laugh with that. And she pointed at a lot of hippos. Well, not a lot of hippos, two hippos, but she pointed at them a lot. And she just loved watching the kids, which was awesome. And then, yeah, Saturday morning, got up, had some breakfast, head on over to the event site and sat down to play. I got past the pool and it was one of those pools where it's like I had, the pool was like 70% black cards. And I'm not like saying like 70% playables were black. I'm saying like the pool was 70% black.
Just all black cards.
Really?
Yeah, it was just like a super heavy black pool. So I kind of like flipped through it and it's like, okay, well, I've got enough playables in black that I should be playing black. And then from there, I was trying to figure out, you know, which direction do I want to go with it? And I had some really good green stuff and I had some really good blue stuff. And at one point I pulled all the black out and said, okay, can I just play blue green? Cause blue green is like the nut. And I just, I couldn't put together a reasonable deck. Like my green stuff was really cool because it ramped me and it got me into the higher end black cards that I could have played. Whereas my blue cards just added more flying and evasion. So it just came down to the thing where it's like, yes, I can make bigger creatures in black, in green, and I can build a bigger deck in green, but I don't interact with my opponent well. And like, that's something I didn't want to do. Like I had good removal spells in black, but I just wanted more interaction. Like that was the one thing that I always found was important for me, in this limited format, is I want to be able to interact with my opponents. And I also had a Bite into Thassa, and that card steals matches.
Yeah, I understand that card is very good.
Yes. So, yeah, I ended up going with a blue-black Flyers deck. Like, for nutty things, it had, like, I had in black, I had the Herald of Torment. I had, you know, a bunch of removal spells. The one that, like, actually the removal spell that did the most work for me, I think, that tournament was the destroy a creature and a land. Because I just felt like I played against like three color decks the entire day. And I was just crushing people's lands with that spell. Like every time I got to cast it, like the it destroying a land was what was like really good.
Wow.
So I think that that's an anomaly. I don't think that that's how it's supposed to work or how it's going to be, but it was that way for that tournament. So I had a feature match. They were doing some streaming. And they were trying to get it working for round one, so I don't know if it actually even got broadcast or not. But I played against, you know, local legend Brian Zimba.
Oh, yeah?
And
Just crushed.
We played, and it was one of those games where we went to time, and we had an unintentional draw. But it was one of those unintentional draws where it's like, if I had the two more turns, like, if they'd given us a slow play warning at any point in it, I would have won it. I'm sure BZ wouldn't agree, but I had him. Like, he had nothing, and I had a flyer, and I needed one more attack, so.
Oh, yeah, one thing you'll learn about BZ is he'll never admit that you had him.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. But, like, that's, you know, in a fun sense, like, BZ's just.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Awesome. So. Yeah. And he'll never let you have that.
No.
No. It was even funny, because it's like, he's dead to rights. And time goes, and he looks up at me, and he's like, would you like to concede? And I'm like, would you like to concede? And he's like, no. And I'm like, no. So we both walked away with a loss, because a round one draw is pretty much a loss.
Yeah.
And then I won the next two, which was really cool. And I dropped a game after that, a match after that. And that one was a rough one. It was a guy who was playing in his first PTQ from Saskatchewan. And he was playing like a Boros build, but he was playing like the GFABs, like 13 land style Boros, where it's like what he really had going on was he just played every one drop, two drop, it felt like.
Ugh.
And I just, like, game one, we kind of had a back and forth, and he got me on something, then I got him good. And then in our game three, he just dropped like one drop, one drop, one drop, one drop, one drop.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't, I couldn't deal with it. So he got me with that. And I can't remember, I think he was using, the spell where you pay like a white and white mana and colorless. I'm just trying to think. Maybe that was an online match. I've been blown out by that type of deck a couple times. But yeah, he just crushed me, and I just remember walking away from it just being like completely shocked that I just got crushed by this thing. And he ended up doing really well. I think he probably top 16'd it.
Okay.
Event. But yeah, after that, it was kind of funny because I was looking at it. It's like, okay, so what I'm in right now is I am at the end of the fourth round, and we're playing eight rounds because we had like 147 players, I think, somewhere in that range. After that round, I'm like, okay, so I'm playing out. If I win out, I could miss the top eight. You know, being at X 1-1.
Yeah.
So, you know, I came to play that. I actually had my judge shirt in my backpack in case I had scrubbed out that I could go and try and run an event because Ness was there and try and get my my L2 locked up.
Yeah.
But I sat there, it's like, well, you know, I came to play, let's play and see what happens. And I won a game and I won a game. And my deck was like so, it had like little evasion things. It had like little tempo plays. It had, you know, the right little amount of removal. And what it did is it just stole games. Like, that's what my deck did. And I felt like every round I stole the game. So I just kept stealing matches. So we get to, at the end of round six, I win that one. And Doug Potter comes up to me and he's like, so just so you know, like, Doug was undefeated at this point, and I think Ted Sloan was undefeated. The two of them were going to draw, but they were probably going to play the next round to try and get, like, you know, one of their buddies into the top eight. Like, I know Doug was trying to get Eric Chan in. So he's like, you know, like, that's one thing that's going to happen, but you need to also understand, like, you can be the wrench. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, being at X1 and 1, when we get to the last round, everyone's going to look, and there's not going to be a way to clean cut splits, because the fact that I exist, I create the odd number. I create a 9. If I go undefeated, there'll be a 9th person at that point, like that point plateau. So if I make it to round 8, a lot of people are going to have to play. Like, nobody's going to be able to draw in. I think only one match did an intentional draw in the 8th round at RPTQ.
Wow.
Because Ted Sloan played and Doug Potter played. I ended up playing against Eric Chan because he had the best tiebreakers of the X2s, and I ended up beating him. He had a rough play against me, and my deck just was working really well. And Eric Chan, credit to him, he was playing like just an absolute donkey pile of garbage. Like, he was running like the 2-1 first strike flyer guy in like a green deck, like just, it was like a white, it was bad. Just a pile of bad cards. And he was saying, like, he was tilting people all day because he was just playing out terrible cards. But he was playing, like, this weird control deck thing that just was bad. But he was crushing with it because he's very good at Magic. So yeah, I ended up winning that match. And I was sitting there kind of dumbfounded that I had finally got my first PTQ top 8, which is something that I have not ever achieved. So I was really stoked about that and just kind of saw how some of the matches were playing out. And the way that it all worked out is that I fell into 8th spot. So got to sit down and draft.
How did the draft go? Like, what was the feeling?
So my big problem with the draft was that I was a bitch. I was a coward and I was a bitch. Why that is I open up the pool, I open up the pack, and I'm looking at the pack, and the rare was something just mediocre. I can't even remember what it was. It was
something shitty.
Yeah, I can't even remember what it was, but I did have a Nyxborn or a Nyx Weaver, the black green spider.
Oh yeah.
I had played a few drafts where I went Constellation. I played a few sealeds, like not triple set sealeds, but like 2-set sealeds or 1-set sealeds. And I played green-black, and I really liked how it played out, and I was, you know, somewhat comfortable with the deck. But what I've been having a lot of success with online is just playing, like, stupid aggressive Boros decks or stupid aggressive white-blue decks, like just, you know, super aggro. Don't cast anything past like 3 mana. Just stupid decks. So I'm looking at this spider thinking, like, I could get this thing. I could do some sort of graveyard thing. You know, I'm drafting black and stuff like that, which might be a little bit better. I know that white's going to be overdrafted. But I was looking through the pack and I saw the red one drop heroic guy, and I saw the white 0/4 heroic guy. And I drafted the white card. I decided, you know what, like, let's not get cute. Let's not build a deck that, you know, is going to be like that. Let's just build the Boros deck, the most aggressive Boros deck that we can, or white blue deck we can, and just go from town. And I drafted a few white cards, passing some like really aggressive red cards to the left. Doug Potter was sitting on my left because I was waiting for the blue stuff to show up, because as much as the red's really good, the blue is, like, way better in the first two packs. Red is way better in Theros, I find. Like, if you're playing white-red. So, yeah, essentially how it all played out was I ended up at the end of pack one deciding I was going to be Boros. Pack two, I passed a couple good blue things, and I got, like, a couple, like, the enchantment that gives you +2/+2, and you can pay mana to make a guy can't block your guy. and I got some stuff like that, but my pack two was just like kind of soft, and I was passing good stuff, good white stuff in pack one, but it was because there was a lot of white stuff in the packs. And then pack three, I got in the Theros pack, like I got fed just like great stuff. I got the white red two drop guy that gets, you know, a buff based on how many guys are attacking. And I got the anal chlamydia guy. I got, you know, all kinds of like really, really good stuff in pack three. But what I didn't realize is that Doug sitting to my left was in Boros also, because I fed him all the aggressive white, red stuff in pack one. And then he picked up all the white stuff. So I didn't get any of the super good stuff in pack two. Like I didn't get a single fall of the hammer, and I didn't get, you know, any of the choice, flying guys like the two drop flyer, two drop wing street rider guy. Like it was just bad. So yeah, it was just kind of rough. And I sat down and I had to play Ted Sloan because he ended up first in the Swiss, and my game one, which was on coverage again, I kept like a donkey hand on game one. Like I mulled the five. I kept a hand that had like a bunch of white cards and a mountain.
Yeah.
And, or I think it had, yeah, it had a mountain. And then I didn't get the second draw because I was on the draw. So I figured, okay, you know, like let's hold on to this one and, you know, we'll get the extra card draws. We'll be able to hit our lands. And yeah, I didn't get anything except for mountains. So my whole game was like on turn eight, I had played my third mountain, and all I was trying to do was discard red cards so I would not show him what my second color was and try to get as much information out of him. Like on turn four, I almost conceded right there. But I just sat there. It's like, okay, we're not going to show him what the other color is. We're just going to play red lands. As soon as we get to a point where we have to discard a white card, we're just going to concede. And that's all I did, is I played up to that point and just conceded.
Wow.
And Ted knew exactly what I was doing. He, like, called me on it the second I did it. He's like, oh, okay, so you're not going to show me the other color. So then game two was a lot closer, but he got, he was able to, like, you know, drop a whole bunch of guys on the board and then build a really aggressive, he had, like, the Alicid and the whatever the one that has lifelink, bestowed both of those on a guy, the Alicid. It was the +1/+2 card and the lifelink.
Yeah, the Holy Strength and the lifelink one, yeah.
Yeah, the Holy Strength and the lifelink. He put them on the tiger guy that when he untaps, you gain 2 life.
Yeah, the Oresco Sun Guide or whatever.
Yeah, so he just had a bigger creature. He was playing white-black. He had a bigger creature than me.
Sure.
And I was winning the fight the whole way through, and I made one just terrible play because I was keeping the board controlled because I had the 2-drop bear that if you pay 6 mana, you can prevent all the damage that he gets from one creature.
Yep.
So I had that guy on defense, you know, making it less beneficial for Ted to attack in with his lifelink guy because I just block and prevent the damage and he gains no life. And I was chipping away at him in the air. And at one point, it's like I attacked him in the air, and then I looked at my hand and I played the white drop, the 0/1, 0/4, 1 mana white drop. And the second I played it, I looked at my board and realized that I left only 5 mana open. So it's like passing the turn, like if he attacks me, because he was at like 4 at that point. And what I did is I bought him a few more turns by doing that. And it just bought him enough time. Now, he was telling me that he had the white redirect spell at that point there. And I don't know if I could have won with like an all-out attack or something. But I felt like I played the game really, really bad in the situation where I had more creatures, but he had the lifelink guy, and there was a way that I could have squeezed through an extra couple points of damage, because that's all I needed was a couple points of damage to win that game. So he ended up winning that. He crushed his next round opponent, and then he ended up losing in the finals to Stefan Gerard, I think his name is.
No idea.
Is that the guy that won?
Chatty guy who played against Hain at the
MTV. Oh, God. The guy that needed a hit. Did he get a haircut yet?
No.
And that's the guy that won.
God. Yeah, that guy ended up winning the PTQ.
I mean, like, he's very obviously very talented at Magic.
He drafted the Stone Nut like crazy deck.
Yeah.
Like, he just had, like, he had the perfect green base deck. Something that would have made John Stern proud.
Wow.
So, like, I remember Ted won his match very, very early, and then I was talking to him, and he sat there, and he was like, yeah, my opponent has the best deck at the table. Like, so, I know Sloan was kind of going into it rough, and then he got mana screwed two games in a row. So
that's
Andre Gerard, Calgary guy, somewhat legendary in his own sense, was just like, yeah, Tensalone's dead. He hasn't played enough land in the match. So, and I know the same thing happened to Doug Potter. Doug Potter didn't play a mountain in like 18 turns. So when you're playing Boros and you don't get any mountains, you're pretty dead.
Yeah, there's no winning those games.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was happy that I hit my top eight, because that was my goal. That was what my target was when I sat down. Obviously, you want to win a tournament like that because, you know, top eight really isn't anything. Like, I got a playmat. That's kind of neat. But
yep.
I didn't go for a playmat.
I didn't know that you had playmats. That's kind of cool, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, I really wanted to win it. But when I walked away from it and I was all done with it, like, a top eight, that's really good. That's a good stepping stone. So now I'm like hyped up on Modern. I've been grabbing all my cards, so I'm ready to start grinding it online as much as I possibly can and get ready for Modern PTQ season.
Nice. So Jay, yeah. you went to this event, didn't you? Like, you at least showed up?
Yeah, I went in around, I'd say about noonish. And hung out. I got to see Jer. I think you lost. Did you lose your first match or the second match I saw you play against Adam Jury, or did you beat him?
I won. I won my second match. I was playing against Adam Jury, I think.
Yeah. Longtime A-Team fan Adam Jury was playing, and I got to watch that sort of. I didn't want to like distract either of you because I'm friends with both of you, so I didn't want to kind of distract you. So I kind of stayed away, but I got to talk to a lot of people. A lot of people were happy to see me come out for some reason, so that was kind of weird. And then I got to play some EDH with Steve Domaluske.
Who is, like, going to be a dad and getting hitched and shit?
Soon, yeah, his wedding, I think, is next week. And we're all piling in the car to go down to Pincher Creek to watch a redneck wedding.
That's awesome.
And then, yeah, Marina's about to pop, and they're going to have a little boy, and they're going to name him Jack. So congratulations to Jack. You are now famous.
Wow.
Yeah, so I got to play some EDH with him, and I haven't got to see him a whole lot lately because, you know, wedding plans and stuff like that I'm very familiar with. So it was cool. We played some EDH. And then Easy Beasy, who went like 0-3 in the first three rounds, I guess if you count his draw as a loss, because like we talked about last week, a draw is a loss for both players, basically.
Yeah.
So he went 0-3, just sucked so hard. And then he's like, hey, do you guys want to play Werewolf? And I was like, Brian had tried to get me to play Werewolf the day before because we went and did a cube draft, and he was like, Francis Toussaint had called because some of the Edmonton guys were down, and they had this game, which is like sweeping the Magic community right now, and he's like, hey, does Brian want to come play? But if he comes, like, the only thing is he has to bring like three other people. So, you know, like, if he wants to come, that's fine, but he has to invite three people. So, you know, tell him that before he comes, because otherwise we're just going to go to bed. So no reason for him to come all the way over here. So he tried to convince us really hard to come and play. And one of my buddies, Ivan, who doesn't get to go out and play very much, he wanted to go. But the way that Brian explained this game just made it sound like complete fucking garbage. So I was like, no, I'm not going to go play that with a bunch of Magic nerds and just fucking, it might be the worst time on the planet, and I would just rather go to bed or go home and play Dota or something, anything. So he wanted to know if he wanted to play at the PTQ, and I was like, okay, like, we're at a PTQ, and I'm having an okay time, so I guess we'll play it. Like, worst case scenario, it takes 20 minutes to play a round. So worst case scenario, it's 20 minutes, and I'm just like, well, fuck this, I'll never play again. Best case scenario, because somebody else had already explained to me how the game works. I believe it was Jeremy.
Yeah, we talked about it
on a show. And there's
he explained it to me at the PTQ. I was like, holy fuck, this sounds amazing.
No, it wasn't me at the PTQ.
It wasn't? Oh, it was Blaine LaPierre.
Okay.
Yeah, so, sorry, yeah. And Blaine and I get along, like, really well. I don't know if it's like we have similarities or whatever, but, like, we kind of mesh really well. So he kind of, I think he knew how to sell me on the game. And it was, like I said, it was really great. So I sit down and I play, and it's me and Brian and Rob Smith, who is like a GP winner. He's a local Calgary guy. He won, like, I think GP Montreal or GP Toronto, like, last year or something. He's English, small, frail-looking guy. Really nice. So it's those three, and then it's Eric Chan from Calgary, because there's three of them in Alberta, at least, that play Magic that are all famous, I guess.
Is this the one that hates good cards?
No, no.
Okay.
And then it's Jason, the guy who owns the game, who's very nice and awesome.
The game or the game store?
The game, sorry, the game. He owns the werewolf.
Then, oh, I'm sorry. Is this a board game? Are there things?
I
thought this was literally just like anybody can sit down and you don't need anything. Anybody? It's just like this person is this and that person is what.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Like, I went home after
some props.
I went home after this and I played the game with a bunch of non gamers and I just used playing cards and basically all they're like identification. Like, so the way that the game works, just to give you a really quick like rundown for the people that, you know, still don't understand it after all the nerds try to explain it. It's kind of like Heads Up 7-Up. Which I don't really remember from when I was a kid, but basically what happens is you have a god, like an omnipotent narrator guy, and he just helps the game go, and generally the person that is that is the most experienced guy at the game. What he does is he takes X number of cards, so let's say we're playing with seven people, he'll take two cards that indicate that people are wolves, and five cards that indicate that people are villagers, and he'll shuffle them up, put them face down, and then people just pick a card and look at it in secret. So let's say, Scotty, you're a villager, and let's say I'm a wolf, right? What happens is, during the day, you have to picture like you're in like a 17th century, like a small village in America. Okay. So during the day, everybody wakes up and they find out that little Timmy has been murdered by werewolves. So they know it's werewolves. There's like eyewitness accounts, whatever, blah, 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 but they don't know who it is. So they know it's not just wolves or a murder. It's werewolves. Okay. So during the day, there's seven people at the table right now that are trying to figure out who the wolves are, and the wolves are trying to shift blame to somebody else because nobody knows who they are. And what happens is during the round, so it's like a 10-minute round, that's the whole game. People are just talking back and forth. So for example, Easy Beasy, who's like the best game player ever, every round that he starts, he just starts immediately by saying in the first round of the game, okay, guys, just so everybody knows, I'm a villager, and that's it. I'm just a villager, so let's just move right on. I'm not the wolf. And so that's a strategy. One strategy is to say that if you are the wolf. And so you're just going back and forth, and you're trying to figure out who you think a wolf is. Then when the round is over, you have like a survivor tribal council moment where you put two people kind of on this wagon to take them to the gallows, and you vote on the people that are on the wagon, like, okay, so should we kill Scott or should we kill Jeremy? And then people will make cases for why they think Scott, who's pretending to be a villager, is actually a wolf, okay? What happens is everybody votes for somebody, the guy with the most votes gets hung by the village. They think, like, okay, we're going to kill this person, you know, like, she's a witch, burn her. And, like, yeah, a lot of innocent people might die, but we might kill the werewolf, and then a lot more innocent people won't die. Then what happens is everybody goes to sleep, and the narrator will say, wolves, open your eyes. And the wolves will open their eyes, and so he knows who they are, obviously, and he'll say, wolves, who do you want to kill? And then as silently as they can, the wolves generally want to come to a consensus of who they're going to murder in the night, and they'll kill someone. And then he'll say, okay, wolves, go back to sleep. Everybody wake up. Okay, Jeremy, you're dead. So now you know that Scott wasn't a wolf, because when he dies, they say, okay, yes, they look at his card, and they say, yeah, Scott was a villager. Then the next morning wakes up, and there's another villager dead. And then what happens is the game just continues until either all the wolves are dead and the villagers win, or there's the exact same amount of wolves as there are villagers, and then the villagers lose because, like, each wolf would just take one villager in the night type of thing. Is like
so each wolf can kill a different person?
Not in the game, but in the flavor sense of it, if there was two wolves and two villagers, like, the villagers would just die.
Okay.
Right? So that's kind of how the game works. So generally you want to play with an odd number of people. Like if you play with an even number of people, it's very difficult because if they don't catch the wolf in like the first round, they basically lose the game in the second round immediately because there'll be the same number of wolves, right? So it's a super fun game. So basically the way the game works is like it'll say like, okay, everybody open their eyes. And I'll just go like, holy shit, I think Jeremy's a wolf. And then Jeremy will be like,
what the fuck? Like, yeah, what did I do that's wolfy? Why would you do that? That's so wolfy.
I'll be like, look at his face. Look at his fucking face. Look at him. Look at him. Jeremy, are you the wolf? And he'll be like,
of course I'm not the wolf.
And then he'll have like this weird smile on his face, right? And I'll be like, look at him. And then people will just fucking jump on that. And like, if he's not the wolf, the wolves will jump on that because now they're like, now somebody else is getting attention and they didn't have to actually do anything.
Right,
that person attention.
But then on the other side of that coin, it'd be like, well, Jay's doing everything he can to drive the conversation and focus onto other people and away from him. So probably he's the wolf. Look at his fucking beard.
Jay, why do you hate Jeremy so much? And then it's like, oh, look at his face, look at his face. It's like, yeah, that's bullshit, buddy. Like, you're being super aggro. Like,
yeah. So that's the game. And the thing that's great about the game is that it's a game about interacting with the people that are around you, like all role-playing games are. So there's role-playing games that are role-playing games. Then there's role-playing games that are really just sitting around, hanging out with your buds with a general interest. You know what I mean? Like, there's no difference between us all watching the same movie we've all seen 100 times with our bros and just, like, commenting and laughing and making jokes and this game. That's exactly what it is. And so we played with Francis Toussaint's girlfriend, Jessie, who was, like, such a sneaky snake. And so we start playing, and we're like, and she's like, very attractive. She's very funny. She's very, you know, she's a normal, like, regular kind of person, and she fits right into our scenario. She's like, and everybody in the community knows her, so she's got this great rapport. And I go when we start the game, and I've met her a couple times, but she doesn't really kind of remember me. We've never really had any interaction. And so we start the game, and I look at her as soon as the round starts, and I say, how many times have you played this game? And she's like, oh, I only played it like once, but I wasn't exactly sober. And then everyone like has a little chuckle, right? And then she fucking sharked the shit out of us, was a super wolf, and beat us. But she played the I've never played this game before tee-hee role for the first round and just smoked us. Just smoked us. And she won like 4 rounds in a row after that. Like, because if she was a villager, she played the perfect villager. If she was the wolf, she played the perfect wolf every time. And like, then you had people like Brian, who in the 4 games that he played opened the game with the exact same statement. No matter whether he was a wolf or a villager, he just would say, okay, I know last time I said I was a villager, but I'm for sure a villager this time, for sure, okay, for sure. And then like, the game's fun too, because sometimes you make mistakes. So there was a time, there's other characters. The game, the more people you add, the more characters there get. So as a really
You get special villagers.
Yeah. So as a really quick aside, I think this game is made by a company called like Asmodee. Is it Asmodee Games?
Yeah.
So and they're a great game company. They're an indie game company, but they dedicate their print run generally to one game at a time because they do have multiples. So like, I went out after this and I tried to buy this because I knew I had people coming over, and I figured if they like this game, we're gonna play it for another 8 hours. If they hate it, well then it's $20 and I don't care because I love this game. So they had it at the Sentry Box, but they didn't have the deluxe version. So the deluxe version comes in a box that's about the same size as like a From the Vaults. It's a little bit like deeper because there's more stuff. And it comes with nice like laminated cardboard like identifying cards for everybody. And it comes with like 30 different special ability characters. So like, you know, Scotty, when I explained Villager and Wolf, like you can take it 30 people deeper than that.
Wow.
Yeah, so... Anyway, so I went to go buy it. They didn't have it, so I just figured, fuck it, I can use it. I'll use the red, like the red jokers in a deck of cards as the wolves, and I'll use like the black face cards as villagers, and I can just play it at home, kind of thing, right? So that's the great thing about the game, and I think that's why it's catching on so well, because A, Magic players love it because they can power game, they can lie, they can shift blame, they can point fingers, they can do all the tricks that we've learned from playing Magic. In this game, you can use them, except for that you're having fun interacting with people instead of having fun interacting with cards. And non-gamers tend to really like it if you play with the right group of people, because they get to do the exact same things. They get to be sneaky, they get to be shady, they get to lie, they get to cheat. And you don't normally get to do that in games, right? Like in Monopoly, there's not really a way to cheat. And what's everybody's favorite part of Monopoly? It's when you land on somebody's property and they forget and they roll and you go, ah, you could have got me for $2,000, but you rolled, bitch. Like, cause that's the only time you ever really get to do something that's not just roll the dice, play the game. You know what I mean? So we had a great time. And the funny thing about the game too, like there was one game where me and Brian were both wolves, but we played it so stupid that nobody believed that we were wolves because we were so fucking bad. So there's a time where like, where I'm a wolf, I look at the wolf, right? And then Jason, the guy who owns the game and has played the game the most and plays at playwolf.net with like Jared Gashotti, Tom Martell, Jerry Thompson, like everybody plays there all day, every day. He goes, okay, so for this round, we're going to have the priest. Now, what the priest can do is they wake up at night and they just indicate someone, just like the Wolves, they indicate someone that they want to save. So what will happen?
So on playwolf.net, Lee Sharp from Wizards of the Coast is playing right now.
Yeah, exactly. Lee Sharp
is like one of the best players.
Yeah. Tom Martell is a spectator.
Tom
Martell and his girlfriend both play, like Brian Kibler, I believe.
Tom Martell is part of the owner of this site.
He is. He started the site. He's one of the reasons why this game is so big right now, is because he took it upon himself to push it. So there's this time, and so Jason goes, you know, there's a priest. What the priest does is they indicate someone to save. So what happens is if I'm the priest, the narrator says, priest, open your eyes, and then indicate who you want to save. I indicate Jeremy. Priest, close your eyes. Wolves, open your eyes, indicate who you want to kill. They come to the conclusion that they also want to kill Jeremy for some reason. Then he says, okay, close your eyes. And then, like normal, he says, everybody open your eyes. And what he would normally say is, Jeremy, you're dead. Jeremy was a villager. But what this time he would say, nobody died tonight. And then the wolves either know that Jeremy is the priest and he saved himself, or somebody else is the priest and they saved Jeremy. So now they want to try to not only get the villagers to vote out a villager, but they want to also find out who the priest is, so they can either get the villagers to hang the priest by act like, you know, without like not on purpose, or so that they can kill them that night, right? So Jason's explaining this to me and Brian are wolves, and I look at Brian and I'm like, fuck. And then I look at Jason, and he's like, okay, everybody go to sleep. And I'm like, wait, so how do we kill someone if the priest saves them? And then everybody's like, wait, what? Are you a wolf? And I'm like, no. I meant the royal we. Like, I was asking mostly for the group, you know? And they believed it. Everybody just bought it and didn't go, you know. And then I wake up in the middle of the night for the wolves, and they're like, we're like, who should we kill? And Brian's like, you guys should kill me, because they're kind of on to me that I think I'm a wolf. So if you kill me, then they won't think that you guys are wolves, because you guys were right in saying that Brian wasn't a wolf, and because they were like, you guys are in cahoots and you're just protecting Brian. And we're like, and as silently as we can, we're trying to explain to Brian, like, no, when you die, the god reveals your identity. So if you're a wolf and we kill you, they'll know that's why we killed you. Then I go, no, Brian, we can't. Oops. And I close my eyes. And again, nobody catches it. Nobody fucking catches it.
Wow.
I can't believe that I'm just an idiot. And Brian also said things out loud twice as a wolf. And again, everyone's just like, man, Brian's fucking stupid.
I was watching this game. This was in between rounds, and I was just dying.
Oh man, it's and like this is why the game is the best. It was so much fun. So I went home. I had a dinner, like a little barbecue, with some friends of mine. I invited some people to come over, but I never heard back from a bunch of them. Sounds like it was some miscommunication, which kind of sucks. But I mean, it kind of worked out anyway. And we played, like, there were 7 or 8 of us, and we ended up playing Werewolf until 3:30 in the morning. And I ended up being, I think, the narrator, because most of the people didn't know how to play, and most of the people weren't gamers. So I ended up being the narrator slash omnipotent one for, like, probably 8 out of the 9 games we played. And I still had the most fun I've ever had playing a game.
Like, yeah, it's fun just to watch.
Yeah, like, even though I wasn't, you know, I didn't get to be a wolf or be a villager voting out wolves, I still had a great time, right? So, yeah, it's super good. It's super good. That was definitely the best PTQ I've ever been to.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, and Jerry, you were supposed to come over afterwards.
Yeah, so I was talking to Jay earlier in the day, and he's like, what are you doing? Are you going back home tonight? I'm like, no, I don't go back till tomorrow. He's like, oh, you should come over and play Werewolf. And it's like, okay, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So after the events are kind of all over, I heard Jay had to leave, and then one of the guys, well, I think it was BZ, who was saying that you'd sent a text saying that you couldn't come out at all, that you wouldn't be coming out at all.
Yeah, I couldn't come back, but I still wanted people to come over.
Okay, yeah. The way that he explained it is that you were done for the night.
Yeah, typical Brian.
Yeah, so I sat there, I'm like, okay, well, that sucks. So I sat there, and it's like, okay, well, I want to play a game, and then they were talking about going out for dinner and playing there, or going to Phoenix and playing there. And I was just like, all I need is a way to get back to my hotel when I'm done, because I didn't have the car. My wife had the car because we had Petra down there. And, you know, it was kind of working out and everything like that. And I was just like, why don't we just play one more game here? We got time. So finally, like an hour later, they kind of come to the thing, okay, we're going to go to Francis's place, I think, is where it ended up happening. And like, that's just, it's not anywhere near my hotel. I'm right downtown and they're out on like the western side of the city. And I don't have a way to get anywhere. And I know that my kid is going to wake up really, really early in the morning because she didn't sleep well the night before. So I, at that point there, it's like, okay, guys, I gotta tap out. Like, this isn't going to work. Cause what it ended up being is that they were going to go out for dinner first and then they were going to go play. So I'm like, I'm just going to go back to my hotel, get some room service and go to bed. So, you know, it was kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever. See ya. And, Matt Mercier was nice enough to give me a ride and stuff like that. And I missed out on Werewolf. So one of the things I played some Werewolf and I didn't get to play a single game. So that I was just bitter about that.
Yeah, that sucks. I wish I would have known because, like, I would have told Brian, like, the thing with Brian is he never replies to texts either. So okay. I was like, hey, like, I'm pretty sure I'm done tonight. Like, I can't come back out. But I had invited him already and Jason already over and you over, right? So I assumed. Yeah. And then when I was leaving, Jason was like, well, why don't you guys come back here and play with your friends instead of us going to your house because we're all already here? And I was like, okay. And then, you know, it turned out, oh, no, you know, that's not going to work. So, but then I assumed, you know, Brian would get it, but he didn't really reply, like, right away. So then I just kept playing, right? Like, I just, you know, just whatever. And then I texted him later and was like, hey, what's your situation? Like, do you think you can come out or whatever? And then he just never got back to me. So had I known that, like, I could have given you a ride. Played with us, like. You know, my only stipulation, and I told Brian this, was like, the only people that can come, if anybody comes, are people that fit in with non-gamer people, right? Like, not saying like I don't want some really great people there, but like, there's people that are great to play drafts with, great to play Magic with, great to surround yourself with just non-Magic gamers, and then there's people that are not good with other non-gamers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they don't fit well with, and I hesitate to say like regular people. But I mean, that's like the best way that I can think of to describe it. Like they just don't interact with non-gamer people. Maybe they're too aggressive. Maybe they make too many jokes. Maybe I don't know what it is, but it's just like those people just get put off by them. And then the gamer people are put off by the normal people or the regular people or whatever. And then it's just like a weird awkwardness. And that's all I told Brian, but I still wanted you and Jason and Brian to come over, you know?
Yeah.
Because Werewolf's sweet. And I'd never even met this Jason guy. I was going to let him into my house.
Yeah, no, Patterson's pretty badass.
So, yeah. So that was, like, my PTQ experience. It was pretty sweet. They had a masseuse, which was kind of cool.
What?
Yeah, we had a masseuse.
There was a masseuse. So, yeah,
$5 for 5 minutes, a minute afterwards.
I think she would take cards, too.
And she did take payment.
Wow. So I'm glad you guys had a good time. It's shitty you guys couldn't get together and have a few beers, but it's fucking awesome that you at least got to see each other.
Yeah.
So jealous.
Yeah, I got to see a lot of really cool people that I hadn't seen in a very long time, which was very cool, so.
Imagine that. You go to a Magic tournament and you see people that you met from Magic tournaments.
It was shocking.
Jeez.
Still, I think before we're getting off the PTQ, one last thing though is that the event was so well run.
Oh yeah, great.
Yeah, like it went really quick. There was like one tiny, super tiny snafu of where they forgot to announce that they had posted the round.
Oh yeah, so that was fun.
The round went to start. There was a lot of judge calls and a lot of people yelling that nobody announced that the pairings were up.
Yeah, and then Adam, the head judge, is like, "Did I not put the pairings up?" And then everyone's like, "No." And he's like, oh, okay, well, everybody boo me for a little bit. Boo. And then everybody booed. And then he was like, okay, well, really sorry about that. Obviously, yeah, the round's not starting if nobody knows that they're playing. So the pairings are up. Everybody go find your seats and let's play some Magic.
Nice.
Yeah, the judges were good. The tournament went quick. Like, I think 9 o'clock we were drafting for the top 8.
Oh, so wow, bad. That's pretty good.
Like, that might even be later than actual. Like, it might have been even 8 something.
Nice.
I don't know. I have to look at my Twitter feed.
So, you said you got, like, a playmat for top 8-ing. What else did you get?
2 boxes.
It's pretty good. Wow.
Journey into Nyx?
Yeah. Now, nice. When I sat down with Eric Chan, we, like, he was like, you know, it's like, you know, like, one of us is walking away disappointed. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, do you want to do a prize split? And I'm like, well, I'll do a pack split. You know, I don't want to be on the hook for paying him for half of a ticket to Atlanta if I, you know, sure. get so lucky. So we sat there and we kind of figured out, yeah, we'll do a pack split. So beating him, though, I knocked him out of prizes completely. So I had to give him a box. But
oh, my God.
It's all good. You know, he would have had to give me a box, so.
Nice. Yeah, so you ended up with a box.
I ended up with a box, yes.
That's sweet. Did you open that box? Was it English?
It is English. What I'm trying to do, because I'm trying to save some money right now, is I'm going to bring it to my local card store, because they have a box of Kareem with my name on it right now.
Nice.
And I'm going to see if he's willing to, you know, give me trade credit on a box, a sealed box.
Nice.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Could be awesome.
I'm sure an English box is going to be easier for him to move.
Yeah, why is that? I mean, it's just, is there a big price differential between the English and the Korean box?
Not for him. It's more just the supply-demand thing.
Yeah, like when Phoenix gets boxes in, like when a new set comes out, normally they'll get like one or two boxes of a bunch of different languages, but only one or two, like Japanese, Korean, Russian.
Sure.
And but they don't sell them for any more than, like, for any more than a regular box. And the reason is because, like, it's similar to foils. Like, the premium cards in those sets are worth more because of players like us that want to pimp out their decks. But most stores' business comes from casual players, and those players hate those cards because they don't know what they do, or their friends don't know what they do.
Sure, right? They can't fucking read them. Yeah.
Like, I remember even 5 years ago playing, or like even 4 years ago when I you know, wasn't competitive, but was playing like EDH a lot, and then somebody would play like a really powerful Korean card it's a card that I've never heard of, and I would be like, what does it do? And they'd be like, oh, it kills all your guys, it reanimates them all under my control, and I search your library for your biggest, baddest guy and put them into play, and they all get haste. And I'd be like, what the fuck? Fuck you, it says that. That's bullshit. And they would, and even if it was true, it was still like, this was before apps and everything existed, and most people didn't have iPhones. Like, they were popular, but most people just still didn't have them. And it was like, no, I don't know. You got to play. It's like Scrabble. Like, yeah, Jobin is a word that we all know, but it's not in the dictionary. It's not English. You don't get to play that card. That's not what that does. And you'd be like, legitimately, you'd just be like, what the fuck? Like, so you know, so, like a casual person is a person who's going to buy a box, and a casual person is not going to buy a Korean box. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Yeah, so, like that's the one thing I always tell people. If they're looking at getting into foreign language boxes, your Chase rares are going to be worth more, but everything else might as well be like bulk lands.
Yeah.
Like, they are just worthless.
Yeah, like, and the thing is too, is like, even me, for like, from like a cube perspective, like, there's been a lot of times where it's like, you know, look at this, I don't know, whatever card, like, I don't know, name a card that would be good in cube, Jeremy. Like
a good cube card?
Like, that isn't Doomblade, like something that's not
that just, isn't Doomblade, oh, like here's a Woolly Thokdar.
Yeah, like okay, sure. So Woolly Thokdar, and then it's like, you have. I noticed you have a Woolly Thokdar. Like, do you want this Korean one? And like, well, I mean, I guess. Like, do you want to trade for my English one? No. Well, I mean, I don't really have anything. Like, do you want to look at my shit? Because like, what am I gonna do with a Woolly Thokdar now that I have a Korean Woolly Thokdar? And when I upgrade it to foil, because foil beats everything in my cube. Like, you know, I eventually want to get everything foil foreign and signed if I could. And promo, but like foil, if I have a non-foil Japanese and I have the opportunity to buy like a foil, I'll buy the foil and replace it. And it's like, well, what do I do with these cards now? These cards are actually worthless. Like, Woolly Thokdar already is not worth a whole lot, but what's it worth as a Korean card where like literally only people who want that card for like a deck and want to pimp it will buy it, and they probably already have that card because it's not new, right?
So you're running like my EDH deck, my Melek EDH, my Melek Commander. I have like 6 different versions of that card. Like, I have English, then I have Korean, and then I have English foil, Korean foil, then I have English Games Day or Game Day foil, and then I have Korean Games Day foil.
Nice.
And it's just like the progressive list. I like upgraded him each time.
But they're like worthless, right? You can't.
Yeah, but now I got a stack of like Meleks.
Yeah, exactly.
A stack of melons.
Yeah, nobody wants that card. You know, it's very difficult to move.
Well, like, that's the thing, is that, like, at worst case, if I have a whole bunch of English stuff, I can bring it into the store and I can get, like, bulk prices on it. A little bit better than bulk prices on it at the local store. But my foreign stuff, he doesn't want it. Like, he won't take it.
Yeah, it's very cool for the people that want it, and it's not even just, like, people aren't even just like indifferent towards it. They actually hate it. If like it's like it's one or the other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they can't read it, and their friends can't read it, and like there's a lot of people that play Magic, and they don't even know what their cards in their deck do because they play it so casually that they'll just read the card when they need to know what it does.
Well, it's like at FNM, you'll have like the casual guy who comes in who doesn't really play a lot of FNMs. Like maybe it's his first one, or maybe he plays like one every couple months. He looks at my deck like I'm playing like some Constructed in between rounds because we always draft. And he sits there and he's like, wow, you have all the like all these Asian cards. Is that Korean? I'm like, yeah, yeah, it's Korean. He's like, oh, do you buy them because they're cheaper? I'm like, nope, they're actually more expensive. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, it kind of does. Well, you can't use it. Like, nobody knows what the cards do. And it's like, okay, well, you know, at his level of play, like, he probably has to read the cards a lot. You know, his friends probably have to read the cards a lot. If you can't read Korean, that is a definite disadvantage.
Yeah, that's true.
So I totally get where it's at. And that's where, you know, like at the store, once he kind of pushes through all those foreign boxes, like he has like a bin where it's like you can get cheaper foreign packs. Like if I want Spanish Theros, I think I get that at a discount to English packs right now at the store. He's just got like a bin of like, I'll sell these for like 25% off just to get rid of them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I'll see if I can, you know, upgrade that, save some money. So, yeah, the Calgary trip kind of hit me where it hurts because I lost all my double time for the shift, so.
Eesh.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you know, like, I haven't talked about not Magic stuff in, like, forever, so I'm in the process of trying to buy a house.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's a big game.
Good yeah, game. We've actually been, like, trying to do this since March. So, put that in perspective. I've been actually dealing with builders nonstop. It's funny because I was a base brat. I was a military kid. And the last military base I lived on was in Edmonton, the military base here. And the base that they have here, they actually moved all of the Air Force out and they moved all the Army guys to the Air Force base.
Okay.
And the Army base that they had, they've knocked it down and the Canadian Lands Company, who owns it, have decided that in northern Edmonton, where, you know, it's not a money neighborhood, they're going to build a money neighborhood. They're going to turn this Greaseball base into, like an elite area.
Yeah, that sounds like Alberta.
Yeah, so it's, like, 27% green space in the development area and stuff like that. There are, like, lakes and paths and brand new school in there, and it's just beautiful. And, you know, I was a base brat, and I want to live on the base, so I found this awesome lot, and I was dealing with this one buyer, and the one buyer was like, oh, yeah, yeah, we can build this house on that lot. And we were like, okay, we're ready to go. And they're like, here's the problem. We didn't actually own that lot. It belonged to these guys, and we were going to buy it off of them, but now they don't want to sell it to us. So it's like super tilt, walk over, find out who the lot belongs to, go and talk to them. So start talking to them, do some like Google foo on them, and like realize that everyone's complaining that they're terrible at updates, they don't communicate well, houses take forever. So I go in and I talk to them about it, and they're like, oh yeah, we know the reviews, let me tell you the story on them, blah, 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 but that's not the way it is. We've changed a lot of things, we're way better now. So we sat there and they're like, yeah, we'll build any house you want, we're a custom builder, show us what you want. So I showed them the plans that we had decided with the other guys, and like, wow, these are really great. And then they threw them in the garbage and they pulled out a different plan and they tried to get us to work within that. So that was like frustrating. And then we were doing all this stuff with them and it was just an absolute nightmare.
Yikes.
So the tough, like the thing that came down to is like, I was really happy because of like my work and everything like that and dealing with the bank. We have a condo that we will like not owe any money on next year. Like we're almost like fully paid off our condo.
Sweet.
And, I wouldn't have to sell it in order to buy the house.
That'd be sweet, so, right?
Yeah, that was like super sweet. I was like really, really stoked about that. Like, that's awesome. And then all of a sudden, you know, prices started to go up because we wanted to get all kinds of different things. And then we sat down for our contract meeting with these guys that were driving me crazy. And they tried to throw a thing in there saying, oh, yeah, we didn't include GST. When everybody includes GST in the area, they have to include GST. But they didn't include GST in their pricing. And then they tried to, like, raise the price on us by, like, 5% without us, like, catching on to it, like, the base price. And then all of these people who were supposed to be at the meeting weren't there. And just, like, all this stuff. So I'm, like, sitting there. It's like, okay, well, I can deal with this. But, like, I need you to drop that price down. And they're like, oh, well, we can't do that. We can shrink the house type thing outside. It's like, no, I don't think you get me. I want the house to stay the same. I just want the price to be lower. Oh, well, we can't do that. I'm like, well, you can't tell me that you're building this house for no money. Oh, well, you know, we don't really make any money on it. And it's like, what, are you serious? Like, you guys don't want to work with us. There's people out there who will work with me. So I end up walking out on the meeting just saying, you know, fuck those guys.
Wow.
So I was super, like, the problem was that once they showed us this lot, we fell in love with it. It's in a cul-de-sac. It backs onto the brand new school. Like, my daughter wouldn't even have to cross the road to go to school.
Wow.
There's a park on one side, a school on the other side. Like, just, like, it is awesome. So I knew in that cul-de-sac that the five lots that back out, or the six lots that back out of the school, I knew one belonged to the first builder I was dealing with, and they had sold it to somebody else, and they were trying to buy another one from these other guys. I knew the other guys who were driving me crazy had four of the lots there, so there was one lot I couldn't figure out who it was, and that morning that I was super tilted, I'm like, I'm just going to walk into every show home in this development until I find out who owns that lot. So I eventually walk into, like, one of the big builders in the city and talk to them about it. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, I've been trying to sell that lot for, like, the last little bit. About a month ago, I decided I'm going to put a spec house on it because I just couldn't move it. I'm like, well, what does that house look like? And he sits there and he goes, what? I'm like, yeah, I want to know. What are you building on there? So he shows me the plans. I'm like, I'll take it. He's like, I don't have a price. I'm like, okay, well, get me a price. I want it. He's like, do you want to see the show home? It's like, you have a show home of it? He's like, yeah, it's on the south side. It's like, good, I'll go see it. Oh, by the way, my name's Jeremy. You know, like.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at kind of right now is I'm kind of getting a little bit of a mess around from the CRA. For the last couple of years, they haven't believed I was in the union. So every time I do my taxes, I have to go through a horse and pony show to actually get my taxes to be finalized because they keep asking for my union stuff.
Why?
Because they don't believe I'm in the union. They don't have... I guess the union's not sending them a form or something like that. So the money I claim towards my union dues, they, like, don't believe it, and they think I'm trying to cheat them. They've done everything but audit me at this point.
Great.
So that's all I need for my mortgage stuff to all go through. So that's where I'm at. Like, the other people came back at me with a price that was, like, super good for the size and where the area is and everything like that. So I'm very, very close. But what's going on right now is I'm actually moving out of my condo because we've decided that we're going to sell it just so that we're not house poor and all that kind of stuff.
Good idea.
Vehicle, we can furnish the new place. I want to do some changes to the house. The unfortunate part is the way that these builders work and the way the spec house is locked in, I can't actually make changes before they build it. Like, there's not even a hole in the ground and I can't change anything. So I might do some changes as soon as the house is built. And I'm going to move into my in-laws. They have a condo, a separate condo from their house. We're going to move into that place. So I'm going to be doing a move, and then hopefully by Christmas I'll have a house to move into.
Sweet, man. Sweet.
Yeah, so I've been trying to move over the weekend while I've been off and all this crazy stuff. And the wife is now, she's supposed to be going back to work, but she's taking an extra couple months. So, yeah, she doesn't have any money coming in. So I'm doing all the money stuff now, which... Yeah,
heavy.
I want to trade for a box instead of buy a box.
Yeah,
long story short. But yeah, I'm really, really stoked. I'm going to have a proper office, which means I'm not going to have to cast from a windowless pantry.
So exciting.
Yeah. I'll have a sweet-ass guest room for when, you know, people like Scotty or Jay come by. And then I'm actually planning on building a gym and a broadcast studio in the basement.
What?
Nice.
Yeah, I want to make a streaming room. Like an actual room for recording and all that kind of stuff. So, super stoked.
That's amazing, dude.
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, like, the whole house poor thing is bullshit. Like, that's fucking tough. Do not do that. Like, you are correct in not doing that.
Yeah, Megan keeps trying to push me towards that. And that's the one thing that I told her I won't do.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's the thing is that the money that we have tied up in this place, like if I were to sell the place and put it in the bank, like, you know, what, or put it into some form of investment, like I don't know what percentage I can get back, but I know if I had a renter in here, I think my low would be about 8% on my investment, mm-hmm. which is pretty good. Like that's a decent investment, but like, you know, the place will depreciate. I could run into some really bad renters and things go really haywire. There's a lot of things that could go bad and it's just like, I don't want the headache. I'm driving a car to work every day that overheats. I've had the tires go on it.
Yeah.
Pretty much we're at the point where it's like every morning I wake up, my car may not start. I actually have a hammer in the back seat to wail on the alternator because the alternator goes on it every now and then.
Yeah.
Or not the alternator, sorry, the starter. So, like, my car is a piece of crap. My wife is, you know, taking our daughter around in a Toyota Corolla in Edmonton. She needs an SUV or something like that, with something with all-wheel drive so that they don't get stuck in the snow. My kid barely fits in the car seat in the back seat of the Corolla as it is. So we need
why do I feel like I'm listening to some ridiculous combination of Adam Sandler's piece of shit car and a country song?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. Like, it's just nutty.
So I can just see Jeremy now, right? Like, I only got one leg and it's a G. Only got one arm and it's on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really exciting. Like, lots of really cool stuff is coming up here. So what we're doing right now is, like, when we move into that other place, like, we're doing that so that we can stage this place super sweet. So, like, we're going to keep some furniture here. We're going to do the place up nice, get some guys in. I just bought, like, $3,000 in appliances to update all the appliances to brand new stuff to make it look even swankier.
Nice. Like,
so, yeah, if anyone listening needs about 1,000 square feet in Northeast Edmonton next to the LRT, you give me a call.
We'll put Jeremy's phone number in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Add just pictures of the place.
Oh, man. First free advertising.
Before it goes on the market.
Yeah, A-team discount. Yeah, it's funny.
Dial Jobin for love.
Sweet. Yeah, so I've been playing Modern again.
That's awesome! Like, I'm finally made the shift
for Modern. I'm really sorry, Jay. Oh wait, hold on, Jared. Before we start,
okay.
So Jay, I've been playing some golf.
Oh really?
Yes, I decided that with my new body, I'm going to golf.
Nice.
I felt like I used to be okay at it before I got absurdly fat, and then I started to be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, now that I'm not absurdly fat, I will continue to not be terrible at golf.
And that didn't work out?
No. As a matter of fact, my first round back, and I hit a 92.
Nice. Wow.
Right?
That's, like, pretty good.
First full round back?
That's how many? How many mulligans? How many cheaters?
I think I took one drop.
That's not bad.
Cause, like, I just lost a ball.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So one drop. It's not bad.
Yeah.
The course wasn't, like, exorbitantly difficult.
No,
by any stretch. But
golf's hard enough, right?
Golf's hard enough. Yeah.
Good
so
for you, man.
I was pretty pleased. I went out with my wife. She came with me.
Mm-hmm.
And two of my buddies, my brother and another buddy. And so we, like, grabbed two carts and we, you know, went out and bummed around on a Tuesday afternoon, like twilight rate. We got, like, with cart, I think the two of us were, like 45 all in with cart.
Nice.
Which is really good. Like, with cart, like, twilight rate, I think was like $23 and it included the cart. Or something like that. Anyways, it was cheap. It was fucking cheap for the full 18. So I was very, very happy. We went out and bummed around. We brought some roadies and fucking were, like, drinking King Cans and hitting the golf ball. And it was beautiful outside. And been to the range, like, almost as often as I'm going to the gym. Like,
nice, man. Nice.
Yeah. So things are really good. I'm really happy. I invested in some golf clubs last year knowing that, you know, they'd pay off. I got a buddy of mine that... that's in the business, as it were. So I got, I'm pretty pleased with my set, and it hits a ton. And my parents are obviously huge golfers. So I got, like, the hand-me-down driver, which is perfectly fine because it's a fucking Pinger 45.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like old man upgrades his, you know, driver that's 2 years old with the next top level, and he's like, oh, here.
Oh, you can just have this.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Hey, thanks. So yeah, it's been pretty sweet, and it's been really nice to kind of get out there and and have something to do with the wife, which is like really important.
Yeah, it's super good. Like it's fun. Like me and Megan will go golfing, and it's like a totally different time than when I go golfing with my buds. Mm-hmm. And it's good for her too. Like she loves playing golf, and she loves that we don't have to be competitive, but she still loves doing well. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's one of those things where you're just like, no matter what, it's like, wow, you did so great, and we got to have exercise, we got to spend time together, like, you know. Golf's a great game. Golf, golf, golf.
It is a wonderful game, especially for couples. And that, so that made me really happy. So yeah, I did that. I've been doing that a lot.
Nice.
So I wanted to share that with you.
Nice gear. But that's a pretty good score on your first time back, too. I'm sure, like, I haven't gone golfing yet this year. It's been kind of shitty here. Mm. And I'm sure that I won't shoot under probably 100 on my first time back. I golfed like 4 or 5 times last year, so.
Yeah. No, it was amazing. I was hitting the ball a ton. I was making really good connection. I mean, I hit just over 100 the end of last season before dropping all the weight, like with the new clubs and stuff. And I spent like an hour and a half with my brother before the course, and just, you know, he's very good golfer, very good. Like, you know, and so he gave me some tips and kind of like gave me some swing counseling, and it worked out really well. And over the course of the day, it was fantastic. Cause like, I got into this rhythm where the balls were always going straight. And I mean, like, that's all you can ask for in golf, right? Is that all of you just connect with the ball and it goes straight. And if you're just aiming in the wrong place, that's your fucking problem. But that's an easy problem to fix.
Yeah, and the thing with golf, too, is that, like, you'll find you'll score better if you shoot less distance but more accuracy.
Agreed.
Than if you try to crank it every time and, you know, it's all over the place. Like, and then the key to golf is changing from, you know, 100 yards every shot but straight down the pipe to 150 yards every shot but straight down the pipe. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So.
Yeah. So it's been really sweet. And like, traditionally, like as a kid, it would either be my driver would be fantastic or my irons would be outstanding. You know what I mean? And then, but the problem is along with that goes the other one is fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Right. And like, and in both cases, like my putting is fine. It's not great. I might not even classify it as necessarily good on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the odd shot here and there. But yeah, it was always just like one or the other, the irons or the woods. And now, like, what I'm finding is that I'm consistently hitting all of those clubs well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty sweet.
Good, man. That's sweet.
Yeah. So we have to get together so that we can golf for
me. Oh, man, absolutely we do.
So, anyways.
Well, yeah, Megan said that any of you guys can come and stay with us anytime you ever want. I mean, I said, you know, KYT and Scotty probably won't, you know, probably won't take us up on that. Like, especially, you know, I mean, obviously Alana and the kids are included in that too. But just because you guys live so fucking far away.
Yeah, it's like literally,
you
know, for
you can't. Job. Yeah, it's like you can't really just. You know, you can't just fly or just stop by because of, you know, the number of hours and money that it costs.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're ever, you know, like I said, I told KYT, like if KYT is going to Portland, for example, that piece of shit, he can stay here on his way over or on his way back, especially since he doesn't work. You know, so same idea with you or with Jeremy and stuff like that, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, we've got a spare bedroom. We've got, you know, lots of couch space. So, you know.
Yeah, I might hit you up on that because, you know, traveling with the little one, it helps to have, you know, house-like amenities.
Yeah,
I don't want to say a word's bad. I don't want to get, like, grammar pronunciation shamed.
But, yeah, no, it's you know, it's something that, like, definitely is a pastime that we can, you know, that we can share.
Yes. Yeah.
Scott, so, you come out for the WMCQ?
When?
In Alberta.
No, I'm not coming out for the WMCQ in Alberta. Unless somebody wants to sponsor my flight, I'm not coming out.
Yeah.
So I'm just throwing that out there. But I have been playing. I started Modern. I got through all of the standard decks that I wanted to play for the most part, and now I'm looking to play Modern because GP Boston's coming up, and I know that it rewards repetitive gameplay. So I need to start that grind test, but I don't know what deck I want to play. So I've decided that I'm on one of three decks. I would love your feedback.
Okay.
I'm looking at Blue White Red Twin.
Okay.
Which is a good deck. I played it on stream this week with Andy Peters. I played it on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very good. Like, we did very well with the deck. We had a couple punts, which, you know, cost a couple games. But, like, for the most part, it was, like, I think we went 4-1 or something like that on the night. And, yeah, I don't know. Like, it plays very much like a mid-range sort of, like, almost like Sean McLaren's list, except that it's got a little bit more combo in it, so that there's very often that you just win.
Like, yeah, well, out of fucking it's one of the rules of Modern in that you should have, like, some way to just be able to steal games. You know, you should be able to punish your opponent if they ever tap out by just straight up winning the game. So that's one of its benefits, is that that deck completely embraces it. I don't like its attacking plan, like its alternate game plan. I think, like, the green-based ones probably do that better.
But so it's interesting that you should say that, because actually, that's probably true, except that no, okay. So this is definitely more combo control. I agree. Yeah. Yeah, like having Wall of Omens instead of Scavenging Ooze is pretty important. And having Tarmogoyf instead of Restoration Angel, both of those things sort of like lend themselves to that being true. I agree. But those other cards are way better. Plus, I don't know if you know that, but white has access to the best sideboard cards in Modern.
Oh, yeah, no, white is the best sideboard color. Like, yeah, again, like, what you're doing is you're playing a bit more control, a bit more combo, whereas, like, if you want to go a little bit more aggro and still have that combo aspect, the green's there.
Yeah.
So, like, it depends what your game plan is going to be. Like, both of them are popular decks for a reason.
Yeah. What I really... So, if I'm going to play a Splinter Twin aggregate, I think right now I'm looking at... Like, I want one that has access to go off with Restoration Angel. And I say that because, like, Restoration Angel, in my experience, is one of the most indestructible creatures in Modern right now. It just doesn't die to anything, except for, like, the hard removal spells that don't give a fuck about what you're targeting. Like, Terminate, Slaughter Pact, Maelstrom Pulse, or Path to Exile. You'll notice that three of those are in one deck.
Yeah.
Right? And the other one is in a bunch of other decks, but... It's like the overlap is really only prominent in one matchup. So anyway, so that's one that I'm looking at. The deck is very sweet. You guys can check out my article on Monday, today, I guess, by the time this goes up, on Legit MTG at noon. And you can take a look at the list and watch the games, because it was very good. The other deck that I'm thinking about is another one I'm looking at is Blue White Red Geist.
Okay.
So Blue White Red Midrange. Very much my speed. I do like my aggressive decks, but it does play, you know, Geist of St. Traft is fairly well positioned right now, provided Jund isn't fucking everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the core competency of cards like, and just raw efficiency, of cards like Snapcaster Mage, Lightning Bolt, Path to Exile, Remand, like, they're all absurd value engines, right? And just sheer efficiency. And Geist of St. Traft is a difficult threat to deal with, and you present a good clock to your opponent. You get to play cards like Electrolyze and Cryptic Command and all that sort of stuff. But, like, Geist of St. Traft demolishes most of the other blue I red mirrors. So it's interesting as an option to explore. What do you think of that deck right now in the format?
I think you really nailed it. Like, I think that it's a powerful deck that just had a bad time versus Jund, because Jund... Like, Liliana was a really bad news for that deck.
On every front, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's kind of in a good spot, but I feel like Jund is... I feel like Jund's coming back.
And so that's my last option, is just play Jund.
Well, that's where I'm at right now. Like, I've built two versions of Jund. I built the Prophetic Flamespeaker version, and I've got Curly's version built online. I haven't played any with Curly's version yet. I've been playing the Flamespeaker one just to start things off.
And what do you think of it? Because I picked up a playset of Flamespeakers for cheap, too, once I found out that deck was a thing.
Well, I haven't connected with Flamespeaker. I've yet to hit a guy with it, but not for lack of trying.
Okay.
So every time I pass that card...
keeps eating a bolt?
Yes, absolutely. The card just eats removal, like nonstop removal. It's never like it's blocked and it does nothing. The card just gets killed. And every time it gets killed, it's one of those things where it's like, if I connect with this, I can't imagine losing this game. It's like having two turns of, like, Bob in play.
Hmm.
Like, you know, it's like if you get to untap with Bob, like, you usually feel so far ahead, especially in a deck like Jund, where it's like you can kill everything all the time. So just like the same thing with, like, Prophetic Flamespeaker, it's like I'm in a position where it's like, okay, I've got four mana untapped now, and I'm going to attack, and if I hit, I get to do a couple things. Like, maybe I'm playing a land, you know, or maybe, like, I'm at three lands and I'm playing a fourth land and killing something, like, or maybe I'm doing that and casting this. Like, it just feels like it's a really good place to be. So I'm very excited to actually hit somebody with a Prophetic Flamespeaker, but it's just so good to, like, go, like, Dark Confidant, Prophetic Flamespeaker, and, like, you can just feel your opponent is just, like, this is so unfair. Like, the guy is just running out two-for-ones. Non-stop two-for-ones.
Hmm.
And then your one-for-ones in Jund are always great because they always do exactly what you want to do. Like, you kill things. So I was playing against, like, the Green Twin deck, and it was a very, very easy match for me. Like, I don't know if it's supposed to be an easy match, but it was a very easy match for me. Because, like, I could kill all of his, like, cheap guys with my stuff, with, like, my bolts and that kind of stuff. I had slaughter packs, I had terminates, I had, you know, all the other things to kill the bigger creatures. My creatures do a ton of damage. Like, I just felt like I was always in control. Game two, I get to bring in some other stuff. Like, I bring in, like, Golgari Charm. I get to bring in, like, other ways to deal with, like, his big guys.
And just having,
yeah. And then there, of course, Abrupt Decay. Abrupt Decay is like the card that makes Twin so good because no one was playing Abrupt Decay. But when Abrupt Decay comes back, Twin ain't so good anymore.
True.
So.
Which is, again, see previous comment about it, Restoration Angel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Restoration Angel is actually a tough card to deal with. But. I got ways to deal with it.
Yeah. All right. So you're just going to play Jund.
I'm going really hard. My game plan, my strategy for this modern season is I am going to learn to Jund like the best of them. And when I need a break from Jund, I'm going to play Dredge.
Dude Storm.
No. Dude Storm, I think, is going to take this season off.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm just going to straight Dredge.
There is a Dredge deck in modern?
No, but that's not a problem.
Oh, okay.
Like, I've got a Dredge deck that I've been playing that's kind of based, like, it started off as a Levy deck.
And oh, yeah, Wrath Levy, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just evolved from there. Like, I'm running Wayfinders in it right now, and those have been doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. As just, like, a self-mill guy that beats and is relatively cheap that I can get Vengevines back off of it.
Sure.
I kind of want to throw in some Farikas in here, see what I can do with them.
Yeah.
There's a part of me also that just wants to have some fun playing with a... try to make, like, modern aristocrats.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the thing or if I want to really put any brain power into something like that, so... I'm just going to Jund.
Fuck. It's tough because I really like some of these... like, I really like some of these blue-white-red decks. But... Jund is always, like, I've got a lot of Jund play. I've played a lot of Jund.
Yeah?
Yeah. Drat. Well, I guess you've done it. I guess I'm going to play Jund this week. Hmm. See how it goes. Yeah. Willie Edel shipped me his most recent changes to his list to the Jeep from the GP.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so I'm going to battle with that this week.
Sweet. See how it goes.
He really likes the Bow of Nylea, by the way.
Yeah, he was playing Bow, and he was getting a lot of attention for playing Bow.
And, like, I asked him if
it has it in the sideboard.
I asked him if it's worth cutting, and he said nope.
No.
He said it's very good. Yeah, he said it's worthwhile just for, like, the random burn matches that you come across. And he said it also destroys... what other deck did he say it kills?
It seems like it would be...
oh, he said it's very good versus Random Burn, Affinity, and Spectacular versus Tempo Twin.
Yes, it is good against Twin. I brought it in versus Twin. It's also really sweet with Prophetic Flamespeaker.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and I think Jund Charm is super good in that list for that reason too. Like I've seen a lot of people starting to bring Jun Charm back. I mean, Willie's playing it and Phil's talking about it, and you know, I mean, if we go back to Kitchen Finks and Jund, if that becomes a thing, I mean, Jun Charm itself becomes insane again. You know, like having a place for these 1-1 encounters is pretty relevant.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like this Jun list was running main deck swords, and it's like equip Flame Seeker with sword.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. Yeah, it looked really good.
So.
Yeah. It's funny because I played against it. Like, I streamed with Jason with Blue Arrow at midrange. Yeah, he was on 1-2-0 or whatever, and he was playing the list. And we played against that deck, incidentally.
Oh, yeah.
And destroyed it. Because, and, like, he connected with Flame Speaker for 6 points of damage. Like, at one per shot.
Wow.
And we still destroyed the deck.
That's nuts.
I don't know, man. Like, it seems like it's good, but I think that engine comes at the cost of some gas that you kind of need. Like, it dilutes the quality of your overall cards, I think. But again, I could be wrong. Like, then again, I understand how insane it is to connect with that with a Sword of Feast or Famine on it. That seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. All right. Fuck. All right, folks. Jun tonight. Come watch it.
You gonna Jun?
Yeah, we'll Jun tonight.
Beautiful.
Yeah. We had a pretty good episode last week, huh?
Yeah.
Actually, critically acclaimed.
Yeah, lots of people liked it.
Lots of people liked you, Jay. They like it when you talk.
Well, great.
You should do it more often.
I should. Maybe we should talk about things that I like more often. He said, like, as if he had no control over the content of the show. I think it was a great show, and I'm glad that lots of people liked it. I was kind of on the fence. Not because, you know, I thought it was anything but a spectacular, but just it's just weird. Sometimes you have a great show and then people don't like it. Sometimes you have a shitty, like what you think is a shitty show, and everybody loves it. So I was actually super happy about it. I haven't had a chance to talk to Chris or anything about it, but I hope that he's happy with the success.
Please have the engaging individual you had standing in for Jay back. He was awesome.
Is that a comment on the
Yeah, Gary Hills.
Yeah. Fucking sweet.
Yep. Yeah. Good. Hashtag more boosh.
New fourth member.
Yeah. Ryan has a comment that was really good. I'm always horrible at writing long, meaningful comments. That said, this is one of my favorite episodes you guys put out in a while, all starting from the hour mark forward. I knew Chris was a cool person before, didn't realize he was an awesome human being until Monday. Having now gone and watched his TED Talk and re-listened to your conversations on equality and open-mindedness, I feel I am becoming a better person, just like the happy wife, happy life period the cast experienced last year. Hashtag more boosh. And as much as heavy meta totes themselves as being the best, they never scratch the depth you guys get into. There, I said it. Internet is forever. I will hand in my SVU badge. Thanks, team.
Who is that?
Ryan.
Oh, Ryan. We got to get that guy a toque.
We got to get that guy a toque. So, yeah, it's pretty sweet. Thanks, guys, for liking it. That's amazing.
Yeah. Totes my goats.
So...
Oh, here's something we could talk about.
Yeah, I'm listening.
It's magic related. Ooh,
oh, look at that.
Woo!
Bullshit.
Bullshit. So we've decided. I don't know if I talked about this, but we've decided we're going to do another boo set.
I'm so glad you brought this up because I made mention that I was going to talk about it last week, and then we didn't.
What are we talking about?
I'm doing another boo set with the build our own BOO, where you make your own magic cards and stuff. So the last one that we did, as a refresher for those of you that aren't aware, the last one that we did, we did the telephone game. So I designed 5 cards and I send them to Jeremy. Then Jeremy designs 5 cards with my cards in mind, so they don't have to be the exact same. They don't have to interact with them, just with them in mind. If I design,
you know, a powerful artifact. Maybe you design a tinker. Maybe you design something that makes artifacts have an upkeep. Maybe you design a disenchant. Maybe you design a guy that gets +1/+1 for each artifact you have. Who knows, right? But just something with that card just in mind. And you don't have to. You could just make, you know, maybe it's like a – maybe it's a 5 casting cost card. And I sent you 5 cards at a time, and they all have, they're all really powerful, but they're all really expensive. So maybe you design an aggro card to beat those cards. You know what I mean? Like, but just, it's a little bit of like a little bit of a peak for you to kind of start off from, a jumping point. It didn't really work because there was 8 of us, and about 4 or 5 of us were really into it, and about 4 or 5 of us weren't into it. So it was a really big problem when you put all this time and work and effort into making cards that are based off of the guy before used cards, and then the next person just doesn't give a shit and they just make whatever cards they want and fuck you. The other thing with that's really difficult, and I'm sure that this happens in Wizards, the thing that's really difficult when you're designing a Magic set that I never really experienced until I designed one, is that we've talked about this before, but how everybody's fun is different.
Yes.
You know, so I think land destruction is fun, and I never want you to play any cards. And, you know, if I destroy all your lands, you can't play creatures, so that's the same as destroying all your creatures. So really it's the same, so it shouldn't be a big deal, you know? Or I like playing Doomblades, but I think counterspells are shitty, and I hate it when someone counters all my shit. But the guy that plays counterspells thinks it's fine because it's the same as if he played a Doomblade. He's just playing a blue Doomblade. You know what I mean? What happened is we ended up with like a bunch of cards that are just basically like, there's a lot of cards that are just like unplayable, but they're whatever that person thinks of as being fun. And so, you know, you go to do a draft and like you're trying not to take it seriously. The draft is kind of like Werewolf. It's more about the game and the fun than it is about winning or losing. But at the same time, you open a pack and you're just like, okay, there's a sword in it. And there's also like a 20/20 that costs 48 mana that also makes you, you know, I don't know. It has like no drawback it has like no benefit. Or there's like a card that's like shock. But then like in the rules text, somebody's like, it's like deal 2 damage to a creature and tap that creature. And then after that, it says tap that bitch good. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's things like that, and then but you tried to make, like, serious Magic cards, and they're trying to make fun Magic, you know what I mean? So it's kind of weird. So that happened, we did the draft, it was really fun, and then, so we've kind of trundled right along into making our next Boo set, which for the core guys that do this is their 9th Boo set, and somehow they're still interested in it, which I think is weird, because I'm sure that there's nothing that we could think of that these really experienced old Magic players who have been making their own sets for, you know, years haven't already thought of, but regardless. So we're making a new set now, and the theme that we're going with this set is we're going to kind of have like a head designer. So, or like a lead developer, I guess maybe you would call it. So they're not designing any cards, but they're like the boss. They're the Mark Rosewater of the set. So we don't, like, I don't know what cards you're designing, but he knows everybody's cards. And then, so for example, I got sent an email. I don't want to give away too many things, but they, like, because one of the people that is in the Boo set with me listens to the show, and it's more fun if you don't really know a bunch of cards before they come out. But, so the first question that he had was, I want you to design a card that you want to play with. There's no restrictions at all. Just design something that you think would be fun in a limited environment, because he wants to kind of start the set off on a really good note of what we all think is fun and try to make that work. Now, I mean, if I designed a Wither card and you design an Infect card, I mean, we're probably just going to play with Infect, you know, or we're just going to play with Wither and have maybe something that kind of goes infecty like with that maybe or something, right? He'll try to work it out for everybody, but, you know, he's not just obviously going to just accept everything. So the second email I got is everyone's card number 1 is now done. Your next assignment will be to make the cards that goes with the others' submissions. Please don't feel like it is necessary to make these cards go with the first card you created. There will be time for that soon enough. Any questions should be directed to me. Here are your next 5 cards. And then he gives me a list of cards he wants me to design, but they're so broad. Like, it could be something like design a removal spell, design a creature that, I don't know, cares about the number of cards in a library. Or not even something that specific, but just like design a creature that cares about a number. So it could be number of lands in play. It could be number of cards you've drawn this turn. You know what I mean? Something like that. And so you can make it a 2/2 flyer for 5 that gets +1/+1 for cards or something. You can make it a, you know, you can make anything you want. So I think that's really fun. And then based on what I send him back, he's going to, you know, send an email to Brian saying like, hey, these are your next 5 cards or whatever. And not everybody's making 5 cards. Some people are making 2 at a time because they get them done really quickly and have really good feedback with Adrian. Sometimes, you know, he's going to give somebody like a week or a week and a half to finish cards, but he's going to give them 10. You know what I mean? Things like that.
Yeah.
So that's the next set that we're doing right now. It's pretty sweet. And I think I've chosen a pretty fucking sweet theme for it. I'm actually like super excited about it, and I've been making them while we've been on the podcast, because all this Magic talk is getting the creative juices flowing.
Nice.
Yeah. So maybe what I'll do is I will send. Maybe I'll do a spoiler of a card whenever I feel like it. So I feel like it right now.
Do it.
So one of my cards. And these aren't final. So I made these just now, so I'm still going to go over them. Adrian still has to look at them, and we might change a bunch of stuff, okay? But one of the cards that I have right now is called Instant Martians. It is a 3/3 for 4. The casting cost is 2 green. It's a creature, and its creature type is Martian, which this is the first creature type I've ever made like that, but it's relevant because of this card. And it says, whenever Instant Martians or another Martian enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a Martian card, reveal it, and put it into your hand. Then shuffle your library. And so it is the dodo bird-looking Martians from Looney Tunes. If anybody remembers, just Google Instant Martians with Marvin the Martian and all. And I've chosen for my theme, and this kind of sucks that I'm going to give this away because I wanted it to be a surprise, but I'm so excited. But I've chosen Looney Tunes as my theme for the set. So, like, some of the most fun I've been having is I'm making flavor text for cards all of a sudden that I'm
designing.
Oh,
no.
So, like, this one is like, oh, dear, now I will have to create more Martians. And it's from Marvin the Martian. I have a card that has I taught putty tat on it. I have a card that says, shh, we're hunting rabbits.
Nice.
And like the art is so great because I get to rip off Warner Brothers, I guess. But I get to pick things like Wile E. Coyote riding an Acme rocket, or, you know, these fucking Instant Martians being, you know, on this card. So I think that's super fun and super cool. And that's my spoiled card. Feel free to give me feedback, or you guys or listeners, feedback or suggestions. And if I can sneak your card into the set, I will. But that's kind of how it is now. Like I said, I think it's really cool. So I just kind of wanted to maybe, if you guys want to talk about it, we can. And if not, then it can just be a me talking about it section. But it's very fun. And we're only 2 rounds in. I've only designed like 6 cards out of 40 or however many. But it already feels way more fun than the last time, because the last time, like I said, there was people where you'd be like, you would design these cards and they were just like, they didn't even care. They just did whatever they wanted. And that's like, if you're agreeing, I think as adults, if you're agreeing to do something in some way at the start of a project, like a joint project, you can disagree, you can have discussions and everything like that, but it's your responsibility as an adult to still follow through, like to still follow through the process and give it your due diligence. Do you know what I mean?
What I think is really important this time around is that you guys have somebody that's actually like steering the ship.
Yeah.
Because I think that's something that was lacking for you the last time. And I think that you're going to find that it's going to make a huge impact on the total quality of the product that you guys are able to produce.
Yeah, and I mean, I hope so. And I like some people were talking about like how like they don't like the idea because they feel like maybe the person in charge is going to be like, you know, basically like if you want to do this, like, why don't you just make your own set then? And like instead of like hindering my creativity because. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, a lot of people can get defensive and say, like, oh, I designed this. I poured my heart and soul into this project. And you just come back and say, like, you know, this card's shit, or you should change that, or you should change this. And now I feel like I just knee-jerk reaction feel like I want to argue with you. You know what I mean? Like if Adrian comes back and says Instant Martians should be a 5-drop and not a 4-drop, or should be a 2/2 instead of a 3/3, you know, and I could instantly just be like, well, no, because like a 3/3 for 4 with double green is hard enough to cast, hard enough to splash already. How do we even know if there's going to be more Martians or if any of them are going to be any good? Like, this card could, you know, and all these things. And then, but really, you know, as an adult, it's my responsibility to kind of let him, like either soar or fail by his own hand. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, if he ends up doing this and it ends up being super shitty, then it's not like so much of a nanananda boo boo. Like, I don't want to see him fail, but at the same time, we'll know in the future that it just won't work. But in the same regard, on the other hand, he might make this way better. Do you know what I mean? It's his responsibility, and I trust Adrian. He's been playing Magic for a very long time. You know, he's being very hands off. He's being very accommodating because he knows that's how we feel. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I think on a couple episodes ago, or maybe last episode, I'm a guy that likes to work within borders. You know, I like getting an email like this from Adrian that says, like, you know, design a counterspell. I can design anything I want. It doesn't say it has to counter it. It doesn't say it can't have extra modes. Like, I could design a cryptic command.
Sure.
He just says, design a counterspell. And that counterspell might be misdirection, where you just change the target, which effectively counters it. That counterspell might be something you can play from the graveyard for this. It might be, you know what I mean? Like, it could be anything I want, but I have a jumping off point. And I find for me, if I don't have a jumping off point, I just kind of get too tunnel vision-y. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, I hope it goes really well. And I'm excited to do Looney Tunes cards because fucking Looney Tunes is the bomb.
Yeah. That sounds like it's going to be an awesome time, man. And I actually really like your idea of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm excited to hear how it goes.
Yeah, and I'll be giving updates because, like I said, I'm really excited about it. So it's going to be something that I'm going to want to talk about. So, and like I said, if anybody has any, you know, Looney Tunes themed cards that they want to pitch, you know, I'm open to hearing ideas. Like, I did steal some people's ideas for the last Boo set. You know, I try to change them because I know what's going on in the set more than, say, like a random person who just makes, you know, Acme roller skates would. You know what I mean? But I think, like, maybe I didn't think of Acme roller skates, and then you submit this really cool mechanic that I couldn't think of. Like, that's one thing that I'm not very good at all, is thinking of new mechanics.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, people often criticize Wizards for this and say, like, you know, every mechanic you make is just kicker or is it kicker or something else? It's kicker or something. But it's like, for me, it's very true. I'm like, oh, yeah, when a creature enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 counter on it, or, you know, all creatures of the same type get this ability. Oh, well, that's already Slivers. Fuck. All right, well, when you cast this creature, you can do an extra ability for extra mana. Oh, that's just kicker again. Fuck, okay. You know, shock. But you could do it to multiple people if you pay more. Oh, that's kicker. Okay. Great. I'm doing great. Trample. This creature will have trample, and this will be a shock, and we will call it
bzzt. Trample shock.
We'll call it trample shock. Great. Okay, perfect. Game, like, move on. You know what I mean? Like, but if I have something to guide me, then I can get really into it. But if I don't have a guide, I'm just like, fucking, I don't know. I make cat. Cat is a 2/2 for 2. Go. What's your card that you make? Like, you know what I mean? Like, in the last, a card that I thought was really cool, but that, you know, the person who drafted it had to basically cheat to use it. But it was called Great, and it had a picture of Tony the Tiger on it.
Nice.
And its mana cost was, I can't remember, it was like a weird symbol, but the card text was, you can cast this card as any card that ends in 8. So, like, at one time I got blown out because he cast it as a mutilate.
Oh, nice.
And killed me. And another time he cast it as, like, a big, I want to say, like, a big artifact creature or something that goes and finds a big artifact creature, but ends in 8. And I can't remember for the life of me what that is. But, you know, but that's a card that I would never think that up. You know what I mean? Like, I could never, I'm not a person who thinks of cards like that. You know what I mean? But, like, how fucking cool is that? Like, early, you could cast it as a Johnny's Pride Mate. Whenever you gain life, put a 1/1 counter on it. Like,
big. Wow.
You know what I mean? Because it ends in 8.
Yeah.
But later on in the game, you could cast it as Mutilate. Like, how fucking cool is that card?
Yeah, no, I agree.
And, like, agreed. To be drafting with that, like, that's a conspiracy type card. Do you know what I mean? Like, where you fucking, this card becomes any card in your deck. Like, how fucking cool is that?
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. So.
That's nice, man.
Yeah. But yeah, and I mean, other than that, I haven't been doing a whole lot of Magic. I think that's probably the only Magic I really got to play was Cube and Werewolf at the BTQ.
Shit.
So. And you, did you play any this week?
Well, I mean, I streamed. And oh, yeah. And so that was good. Cute. Yeah, that was good. I had a good time with that. It worked out well, and I can't complain. So we'll see. My only complaint is that there are too many sweet decks to play in Modern, and I can't possibly play them all.
Yeah.
So that's really my only actual complaint.
But that, and see, like, for me, I hate that part of Modern, but...
Well, you know what's interesting? It's like, because, like, all decks have a potential, right? There's tons of potential in every deck, and it's just a matter of, you know, how much of it you can find for yourself, I guess.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
But, yeah, just fucking so frustrating. So frustrating. We'll see. I'll get there. I'll figure something out.
Right on.
But, if there's, like I said, so this week, not too much more happening. We've got a pile of stuff that's happening the week after. Fucking, yeah, oh yeah, yeah. So my weekend, the weekend after this posts is the weekend that I'm actually in Niagara Falls with KYT.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. And Joe's getting really jacked, Joel.
Joel, yeah.
Joel is getting really jacked for that.
He is. Well, the event's going to be insane. So I guess I have to figure out what standard deck I'm going to build this week. Fuck. So I have to have Standard and Modern for that event. Shit. All right. But yeah, it's going to be really, really awesome. And I can't wait to just gunsling all day. And I'm hoping that I'll get a pile of Modern games in. So if you guys want to bring Modern to battle me, I would really appreciate it. You can help me help myself for Boston by playing more games. Very happy. And then Conspiracy all day Sunday.
Man, I'm so jealous of you for that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's a guy that I play Dota with that I know from Twitter, and for the life of me, I can't remember his name right now. But he's in Japan right now.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I know who you're talking about. You're talking about Bruce.
Yeah, yeah. And I asked him if he could get me Japanese stuff, and he was like, yeah, what do you want? And so I'm going to look at my cube list and see if there's anything over there. But I also said, like, hey, if you can get any Japanese Conspiracy... I would be fucking in love with you for that. So I hope, I'm crossing my fingers, that he can get me some sort of, you know, case or truckload of Japanese Conspiracy, because how fucking crazy would that be? It'd be annoying the first couple times. Like, we'd have to get really familiar with the set, like, especially because of the drafting part. You'd have to know exactly which draft specific card you're drafting.
Yeah.
But I mean, I still think it would be so fucking cool to have, like, a Japanese foil Cogwork Librarian or something. You know? Also, an interesting thing about Conspiracy that I learned, apparently the draft-centric cards are in every pack. They replace the basic land, I think.
Yeah.
So that means every card has one of those.
Yeah. There's a bunch of common ones that are just crazy. Somewhat terrible, too, though, right? Like, Ghostbusters.
Well, I don't think they're terrible. I just think that they're just not as powerful. Like, there's one that lets you see the next card drafted in a pack. Sure. And I mean, like, that's but that's not a super powerful effect. It could be helpful. It could do nothing. But at the same time, like, at the end of the day, that guy's still a 2/1 flyer for 3.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that card still easily fits into a bunch of decks.
Yeah, and they've done a good job in that. In that they can, you know, leverage. The mechanic while still having guys that are usable.
Yeah, like, I made that mistake in the last Boo set. Before I designed the last round of my Boo, we saw the Cogwork Librarian spoiler.
Yeah.
And so I made a card for our Boo set with that, because a lot of the players that we play with don't look at spoilers, especially not for casual sets.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, like, maybe they would think this was really cool. But I didn't make it a creature. I made it I made it the All-Seeing Eye, and I made it that all players play with their hands and the top card of their library face up. And I got a bunch of shitty feedback on that card, because it was like, why would I ever draft this? Like, it's shitty, it's garbage, it doesn't do anything. I was like, it lets you take 2 fucking cards in a pack. How is that bad? But the problem was that it got opened super late. So it was like, well, if, I mean, you know, it's not as powerful when someone's taking it like pack, you know, three, pick three, instead of like pack one, pick two, maybe, or something.
Sure, you know what I mean?
So, and because I didn't make it a creature, it was like, well, yeah, if there's not a whole lot of cards left in the pack, then this card actually just is a bad pick for you, because you're not probably going to take two cards with it, and it doesn't fill out the slot of just being a Bronze Sable or something, you know?
Yeah.
So I think they did a really good job for that, and I would really love to speak with like a developer or designer on that to see, you know, if they just started it that way, or if there was like me where there was like maybe artifacts, enchantments, and sorceries and instants and shit that did something, but were conspiracy draft cards, but they just found, you know, like you have to make them super useful so that people always want them no matter what.
Well, that's a really good question. I guess we're gonna have to try to find somebody. Who's in R&D that was on the set that would come onto the show.
Jeez, yeah, I don't
only knew.
You know, you guys are talking like you do know, but I don't know. I don't know who we could talk to.
I was legitimately saying we should find somebody.
Me too.
Yeah. Jerry, you got someone in mind?
I thought Jerry might have some information on it.
Well, we asked Jerry about it. We asked Jerry about it, but A, he's NDA about everything for some reason.
Until it releases, though.
Yeah. Is it until it releases?
I think it's 30 days after it releases.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about it, but
he can't really do anything or play anything.
Well, that'll still be interesting after it releases to know about the design process. But the other thing, too, is that he said that Conspiracy was already done by the time he got there.
Yeah, that's true, but so he may still not have worked on it, but I have to imagine that those guys have some sort of, you know, like people do tell stories.
I'm sure he'd still have some information.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm super excited for that. I hope I get some Japanese fucking Conspiracy. I think that'd be the tits.
All right. Well, let's see if we can find some. Bruce Lee, do the right thing.
Yeah, do it. Do it up.
So, Bruce Lee's a good guy, by the way. I mean, he came to my birthday pre-release. He's local to me.
Oh, cool. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, he came to my birthday pre-release, and we had a good time.
I know that they might be trying to get some Japanese boxes of Conspiracy in Edmonton here.
Oh, so yeah?
If you're anything, I can put one on hold for you, Jay, if you're interested.
Also, Joel can get anything, too, if you ask him. So,
right on. Yeah, I'm down for that. I mean, Jeremy, I'll probably take you up on that offer. Like, if you can, just get it for me, and I'll just pay you, or I'll just give you packs in trade or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll figure out some way. We just have to get down to you.
Yeah, that's the thing. For you, it's a lot easier for you to get it to me than it would be like Scott or Joel or Bruce, right? So
yeah, where it's like that special edition werewolf you want, the store in St. Albert here has it.
Yeah, like I went to go look for that. I called the Sentry Box. They were like, yep, we have it. I went there. Then they were like, no, we don't have it. And I was like, fucking fuck. And the thing is, like the special edition is what, like $20?
Yeah.
Something. And the regular edition, because it's like 15, so like why would I not buy it? And the regular edition, also I meant to talk about this earlier, but the regular edition is about the size of those little side loader magic deck boxes, you know the ones I'm talking about?
Yep.
They don't have a flap on the top. They're the ones that have like the Velcro on the front and they're sideways, and they have like they make them for every set. A lot of them come with sleeves, like so you can buy them at a pre-release and have fun with them kind of thing. So they're almost that big, but they're a square instead of a rectangle. And like the cards in them are regular cardstock cards. So they're fine, but the problem is like after you play a game like that enough times, the cards get marked. They would get bent or curved or whatever. And so you know like it's a little like the game really, really depends on you as a person playing it, not cheating. Opening your eyes at night when you shouldn't, not looking at other people's cards when they're looking. Like, you know, I mean, if somebody picks up their card and they're not being really secretive about it and I can see it, it's on me to not look at that card.
Yeah.
Because that ruins the game. So I wanted the special edition one because the special edition one is $5 more, but the cards it comes with are like those thick like cardboard, like what you would give a kid as a puzzle. You know,
yeah,
the big
kid puzzle pieces.
They have like, you know, 10 pieces or whatever, that's how thick they are, and they're nice and laminated, so those are never going to get marked generally, you know, they're nice and big. It comes with all the expansions, and like I said, so there's like 30 fucking people you can be with special abilities.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you're interested in that game, anybody out there, especially you, Scotty, like I definitely recommend you take a look at it. I'm sure like a bunch of game stores would have it, like the you know, the more gamer oriented ones versus the Milton Bradley oriented.
Sure.
But like I said, I played it with a pack of cards at home. You know, I wrote priest on a villager card, and then I had four villagers that were black, like face cards, and then I had two red jokers, or I just used the jokers for the wolves. And you just shuffle them up and deal them out face down. Perfect game to play when you're just having one of those chill out with your friends at home, drinking with all the wives and friends. You know what I mean? Because you're just sitting around talking and having fun. You're having a great time. So
yeah, I made a set with magic tokens.
Yeah, exactly. That's, I should have thought of that. Holy shit.
Yeah, because I have, like, wolf tokens, and then I have, like, different townsfolk like for different things.
Or, like, one human
soul. Well, that makes a lot of sense, too. Shit.
Yeah. I never even thought
of that. So it's, like, Innistrad humans are, like, so good for it. Like, Innistrad's a great set just for tokens in general. Like, that block just really is really good.
Yeah. Oh, and the thing, I think one of the reasons that it's really big right now, not to get back onto Werewolf and talk about that a bunch, but one of the reasons it's really big at Magic tournaments and stuff right now is because, like, we had guys jumping in to play Werewolf in between their rounds if they got finished fairly early. You know, and then the game would be over or they would die, and then they would just hop out and go back and play their, you know, the next round of the PTQ. You know, and it's things like that. Like, and every time we finished a game, there was more and more people around us watching, and we would just look at them and say, like, hey, does anybody want to jump in on this? Because if you do, like, feel free, just jump in. Like, it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Don't be shy. Just jump in. It's literally a game just about you convincing me not to kill you.
I'll suck your dick, man.
Yeah, people do that. Well, you know, maybe after a couple beers and an adult-only game, but...
Sure.
Yeah, but I was surprised. Even Megan liked it. Like, she was my holdout. I thought for sure she would hate it. She doesn't like games where you argue or get aggressive because she doesn't like confrontation. But she loved it. She was fucking devious. She tricked people, you know. The one thing I have to tell everybody that I saw happen over and over again as the narrator, definitely don't be afraid to lie. Like, there's people, there's a special ability guy that most people play with in the game, and he's called the Seer. So he's not as powerful as the priest, but what the Seer does is at night they wake up, and then the narrator says, tell me who you want to see, and they point at a person. And then the narrator will tell them thumbs up or thumbs down whether or not that person is like a wolf or a villager. So thumbs up is good, they're a villager. Thumbs down is bad, they're a wolf, right? So then what happens is, at night, the wolves can either kill that person without knowing who it is. So if they kill you, like, just randomly, then you don't get to use any of your information. But if they don't kill you, you wake up during the day, and, like, now it's up to you strategically whether you say, like, I'm the Seer, and I know that Scott's a wolf because I looked at him at night, and I was told he's a wolf. But then, of course, you know, you're dead the next night for sure because the wolves are going to kill you. You have that a really good power, right? But at the same time, like, there was times where I'd be like, I'm the Seer, and I looked at Megan, and she's a wolf. So what's going to happen is we're going to vote out Megan this round, and then I'm going to die at night, and then you guys vote out the next wolf the next round, which we're pretty sure is Dennis. And then Megan would just be like, shit. And I'd be like, what? And she'd be like, well, you caught me. I'm the wolf. I'm like, oh, nope. You definitely can just be like, no, I'm the Seer, and Jay's the wolf. Like, that's the game. Like, you don't.
Jay, that's absolutely impossible. That's fucking bullshit. I'm actually the Seer. Round one, I saw this person. Round two, I saw this person. Round three, I saw this person. You know, just like try to present a better case for it.
Yeah, like, and like
holding up because I hadn't found a wolf yet.
Yeah, but like I said, like it's like people that you're just accusing of being wolves. A lot of times they're just like really nervous and they don't want to argue because you're friends with them, and they're just like, ah, shit, yeah, you got me. I'm the wolf, and you're like, oh, okay, well, then you're dead. And it's like we're just going to kill you right now then. We don't even have to vote. And then it's like, no, just fucking lie. Just lie your fucking face off. So, yeah, it's a really great game. Buy it.
Yeah, actually, I saw Jay Next Level, which was really fun. They were having a tough time. He was a wolf, and they were having a tough time figuring out who they were going to kill. And right in the middle of like them pointing around because they have to be quiet because if they use their voice, people will catch on. Or at least they should, as Jay proved that they don't pay attention sometimes.
Yeah.
But he's sitting there and they're picking blah, 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 blah. And then as he's like picking around and everything like that, he's just like, just fucking choose somebody already. You know, like making it seem like he's got his eyes covered and he's waiting for the wolves to come up with an idea.
Nice. Yep.
And they super bought it. I was looking right at Brian and I'm like, okay, we're gonna pick Jesse. And he's like, yeah, okay. And then he goes to close his eyes immediately. And I'm just like, fuck, just pick somebody. Like, it's been forever. Oh my God. Please don't kill me, by the way. And then yeah, they bought it and they're like, oh my god, I think it's this guy, I think it's that person, and I was like, hee 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 hee. So yeah. Oh, and I'm just on the Asmodee website, so it's Asmodee is the game company that makes
Asmodee,
this.
Asmodee, sure.
Yeah, Asmodee or whatever. The official name of the game, like this version anyway, is called Werewolves of Miller's Hollow, if anyone's looking for it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like a very good copy. There's a dozen different versions of that game because that game's been around forever, but that's a very good version.
That's the very good version, and that's the one that comes with the deluxe and stuff. So
yeah, if you look for the special edition one of that, like that's a good thing. If you don't find the special edition one, there's like the first expansion, which I think the special edition is like the base game and the first expansion.
Yeah, yep. And like yeah, the MSRP on this game on the special edition is $12. So, you know, anywhere between $12 and $20 is... I would even pay $30 for this game.
Really?
Yep.
So there's a sweet version, actually, that I think I found online. There's also an app for iOS and Android.
Holy shit. The game has changed.
It's called... I downloaded the app. I haven't actually done anything with it yet, but I downloaded the app.
What's it called?
It's called
right now.
One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
it?
Yeah,
looks like it's another version of it. And
Jeremy,
so, yeah.
Have you played that, or do you have any feedback on that?
No, I have never played it, but I do know that it's a thing.
One Night Ultimate Werewolf. Free! Oh.
The app is free. Hold on. So the app is free.
Yeah.
And there is the actual game, the paper game, is like $25 online.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's so bad. But yeah, like it's super fun, and like I said, only buy it if you care about the aesthetics of it. Like they put the game together really well; it's really nice. But I mean, really, like definitely play it at your next get together with playing cards or magic tokens if you have them, and just explain it to people like this: we're gonna play a game. It's about interacting with each other. If anybody's played Apples to Apples, tell them it's like Apples to Apples. And then just explain the game. And then I recommend whoever's going to put this on that you be the narrator. Like, because you're the one that knows how the game works because I've explained it to you. So you be the person that guides it. And the thing is, too, the narrator should step in kind of like God every once in a while. So, like, what I would have to do with my friends a lot because they're not gamers and because, you know, they're shy, they've never played the game before, they don't really know where to go, I would say things like, you basically are being a hint bot in a video game. So I would say things like, okay, well, you guys have, you know, the round is 10 minutes between day and night. Just so everybody knows. So you would say things like, you have 7 minutes left. Does anybody think for sure that anybody's like evil? Like for sure, 100% a wolf? And if anybody put up their hand, then I would say, okay, well, why don't you tell the group who that is and why? And then they would say things like, Scotty's a wolf for sure. And you'd be like, why? And they'd be like, I don't know. I just think they are. And that makes them look like total shit. Right? and like, so I'm as the god, I'm like curbing the game, right? But it's like, I'm only helping you along. You know what I mean? Like, there was a time where I said something that basically exposed who the wolves are, but the villagers didn't catch on, and the wolf looked at me like 3 times and just said, "You just fucked us. You just totally fucked us. The game's over. You just fucked us. You fucked us." And I was sitting beside him, but he wasn't whispering. He wasn't yelling at me. But he wasn't whispering either. And still, the villagers were so enraptured in the fact that in the biscuit that I tossed out, that they didn't even hear or see what was going on.
Wow.
And that's the thing. The game is about that. If I'm sitting there and I'm just fucking trying to convince, I'm on the podium trying to convince everybody that Scott's a wolf, and 2 people in the corner can kind of almost, it's not like, like think of it like sneak away to have a secret conversation. I mean, you're not supposed to whisper. Everything's supposed to be out in the open. But if you just talk at a regular voice to these 2 people that are on either side of you while I'm talking to the other 5 people over there and they don't notice, well, they don't notice. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's the coolest game I've ever played because of that. Huh. It's like a social experiment game. So.
Wild. Yeah. Wild.
There you have it, gents.
Nice.
And ladies. Oh, congratulations to Bloody Mess Jess for going 10-3 or 10-5 or something? Final record at that last GP that John Stern won?
She day 2'd, yep.
Yeah, she well, not only did she day 2, she even played really well on day 2. And it was her best finish to date in a GP.
That's fantastic.
So fucking, yeah, good for her. That was awesome to see. She had a little friendly bet with Brad Nelson that Brad had to buy her beers for every win that she got, and then he tried to back out of it. I don't know if he actually did back out fully or not, but do the right thing, Brad, you bastard. But yeah, so congratulations to her, and congratulations to Christine Sprankle, who did really great cosplaying as Elspeth and Chitara on the weekend. Yeah. And is about to take like 2 months off to just play cosplay life.
God damn it. Must be nice.
Must be fucking nice. I'd like to think that though she did do a lot on her own to get where she is today, that we really gave her a foothold to step up onto our faces and become successful when we had her on the show.
You would like to say that?
I would like to say that. I'm not going to say that, but I would like to.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
Yeah. Also, when the fuck is Kyle back?
I don't know. Jesus Christ.
Not soon enough.
Seriously, that guy.
God damn it, Kyle.
Fucking, it's like he works for the union or something. Yeah. He takes more days off. I swear to God.
Aren't your kids old enough to move their own shit?
Like, I know.
Put their shit in a handkerchief, tie the handkerchief to a stick, and tell them to walk to Winnipeg. It's the summer. They'll make it.
Yeah, yeah. Guess what you're doing with your summer vacation? Get fucking walking.
Yeah. And if a
we still love you, Avery. We just think that this will build character.
Yeah, character. And you need character. That's something, I don't know what it is, but that's something that old people say is important.
Yes, absolutely.
It's more important than Moxie.
That's for fucking sure. And I was just about to say that, even.
Woot!
Woot! All right, guys, well, I think
good episode.
Probably it, if nobody has anything else.
No, I think it was a good episode.
Yeah, it was good. It was beautiful.
If anybody misses KYT, definitely tweet him and tell him to get back on the show so that he can laugh every once in a while.
No, KYT was here the whole time.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I forgot about that. We're just going to edit him in.
But yeah. No, we're not, because Kyle's not here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
When Kyle, maybe Kyle is KYT. Maybe Kyle is, like, the puppet master behind the curtain, and he just uses a voice changer.
God, that'd be so fucked up.
Man, could you imagine how fucking deep that would be? Holy shit. The A-Team is swirled in mystery. Also,
we should have had Kyle on this episode.
We should have. Also, Heavy Meta is recording right now with TSG, and I'm sure that that episode sucks.
I had a wonderful question for him.
What was it? What was it?
Well, I asked. I don't know if it got asked, but... yeah. So it was, is Conspiracy your most favorite set ever? Do you feel like they made it for you special? Oh, wait, no. Like you as cubers. Do you think they made it for cubers special?
Oh, man, that's a good question.
I mean, I feel like it's a good question.
Yeah, I think so, too. I hope they answer it.
Yeah.
Jeremy, when are you going to go on that show?
When they'll have me.
Oh, no, no, no. You have to campaign to get on there. That was the bet.
Oh, no, they already said I'll be on there.
They did say you'd be on there.
You can't just forget about that shit and just let it go.
No, that's it. Seriously, it's awesome.
Okay.
I'm excited.
I'll listen to that episode.
Cool.
So. A ring-a-ding dandy. All right, guys. Well, I had a great show. I'm sorry that KYT wasn't here for the viewers, but or the listeners, but I think we did a good job without him anyway, like normal.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, we'll catch you guys next week. Pew, pew, pew,
pew. We'll see you soon.
Bang.